So after we were done with IVF, and Rich kind of alluded to this on the last one, that we were kind of looking at moving to Florida and we had started to pack up the house. And I think the irony of IVF is one of the biggest motivators for us starting to look at moving to Florida was like, oh, we're going to have two kids soon. We need help. Like, and we went into IVF never thinking it would fail.
We thought this is just gonna
Right.
happen.
So we're just going to prepare our lives, put our house on the market, get everything together so that we can go to Florida, get assistance from my parents because we're going to need it with two kids and two demanding jobs.
Spoiled by the beach, all of that
Right. We
stuff.
just had this full vision. Like we are like we were so positive about it that like in our minds there was no way it wasn't going to come to fruition. And then of course, IVF failed and we were already committed to moving, but I honestly think that was so, it was good. I mean, probably a lot of people would say it was running away from problems, but I think for us, it was like a new beginning. It was like, let's just leave all of this negativity and crap in Atlanta and just continue with our plans. It'll be good for Donovan anyways. He'll be around his grandparents. You know, we just need a fresh start.
And I think what was interesting about that was we had jobs that were flexible. We could work anywhere, more or less anywhere we wanted to, as long as we worked within, well, for you, it was your territory for your job. For me, I could work anywhere in the US and any of its territories. I could, as long as I'm in somewhere in North America, I could work. So it wasn't that big deal for us to move to Florida. In fact, there's coworkers I have to this day that forget that I moved because they really don't care because everybody's remote anyway. So I think we were saying, okay, once the house sells, we're going to move and we're just gonna go ahead and just make this happen. But there was a couple of things, a couple of events that took place with Donovan that just said, okay, now that the surgery, we're on the other side of it. You've done the thing to, clean up your uterus and all that surgery that you had as well to make it easier for you to get pregnant. One, I think probably was it a couple of weeks after that,
We had some issues with his
we had
daycare.
some sick, crazy issues with his
Yeah, the
daycare.
quality had gone down. We had him at a family run daycare, and the management had left, and the quality of the daycare had just
Yeah,
gone
the
down.
founder actually passed away and it went to the founder's daughter who didn't have any appreciation for
The history
the
of the
history
day.
of it and the level of quality that it took in order to keep that daycare running at its optimal level. And so basically she alienated the head of
The
the
director,
director
who
of
was the engine that kept that place the way we loved it. A lot of teachers, the teachers that we loved left. So a lot of the reason we had him there were that were daycare, and many of you who have kids in daycare know the turnover in daycare is pretty consistent. And this daycare previous with the previous director had kept people there for 20 years or more. So it really felt like, you know, someone's grandmother watching your kid. It was just so loving and so beautiful. And a lot of those people left. A lot of the really qualified ones for the upper levels who ended up getting teaching jobs and leaving. And just a lot of non-desirable people started working there and who just didn't give a crap about kids. We started seeing things that were really questionable. We started wondering who the heck was taking care of our kid. We would go into classes, there'd be different teachers from day to day. And we were just very concerned. Plus, at that point, he was three and he needed a more advanced curriculum. Our son is very. I know, and everyone says, oh, our kid's very intelligent, but Donovan is like extremely intelligent, and he was beyond what that school could teach. And he needed to be much more engaged in like actual schoolwork than like babysitting at that point.
So basically, it got to the point now where he was starting to learn things from some of the other from the other teachers at school. But then when you, it's the equivalent if you took a Toyota engine and you replaced it with the engine of a Ford Pinto. It was extremely terrible. And I think the straw that kind of broke. I think it was, I'm trying to remember what it was. I think it was
The
like one of
diaper
the diaper
situation, the pull-up
situation.
situation. He was picked up from school
I think about my mom.
Yeah, your mom was in town and picked him up from school, and she called us and said that they hadn't changed his pull-up all day.
So basically, he was walking around all day in class with a pull-up that had never been changed. They never asked him, do you need to go to the bathroom? Do you need to go poop? So when my mom picked him up, his diaper was completely full of urine and feces, and that had never been changed all day. And it was literally leaking out. And by that point, Tammy and I were both pissed. We were just
we were livid, and we told them that he would be out, he would not be there next week. So we pulled him out of daycare and we said, you know what? The house isn't sold yet, but we can't keep him here because
it's becoming a detriment to his development.
Right. And it's dangerous. I mean, that's dangerous to do that. I mean, for a boy, it's less dangerous, but if that's a girl, that's UTIs, that's all kinds of infections. And so we just didn't trust it anymore. So you know, we made the decision that we were just going to go ahead and we talked with my mom and dad, of course, and they had the space, they have a fairly big house, that we said, hey, can we move in till our house sells
and we find something,
And so we moved him down and put him in a brand new daycare, which we love and is amazing. Yeah. And he, I mean, in a matter of weeks, he thrived. Like, so imagine he was probably behind some of his classmates in the school because it was literally night and day. And, you know,
within a month, he had caught up.
And now he's been there a year and a half, and he's the smartest kid in his class. His teacher says he's the top kid. So it was definitely the right choice for our family. Our house sold like maybe 2 months later.
Yeah, we went under contract 2 months later.
Yeah, after that. And we found like the perfect house at the same time. So it was really like the perfect timing for everything. And
we sold the house in Atlanta and closed on this house here in Florida literally the same day.
Yeah, it was literally the same day. And so we moved into our house December of last, no, not last year, 2019. 3 months before a global pandemic.
Yeah.
So talk about perfect timing. Moving to Florida in a house with the pool when everything shut down was like literally probably the best decision we've ever made in our life. Yeah. The timing was perfect.
And honestly, I think if it wasn't for the house that we have now, if we were still living in Atlanta in the house that we were in during that pandemic, and had to deal with the shutdowns and not being able to do anything. And his daycare, if memory serves, the daycare that we pulled him out of, they shut down at around the same time as everybody else. And they didn't open back up until probably the summer.
Yeah, it was several months. And the daycare that he had here was shut down for a month, but it's controlled by a corporate location out of Pennsylvania, which has the strictest, at the time had the strictest COVID laws. So they really locked that place down, and they have very strict rules around COVID and disinfectant and what can be done. And, you know, knock on wood, that so strict, in fact, that Donovan hasn't got a single cold. Even none of the kids have had it. knocking on all the wood. That he hasn't even gotten sick since they've instituted these protocols. That's how serious it is there, is that the kids are like almost like, and anyone who has a kid, especially a like kid in daycare, to hear that they haven't gotten sick in almost a year is kind of wild.
Donovan's been at that daycare a year and a half, and maybe there's been a, we can probably count on one hand how many days he's actually had like colored snot come out of his
nose. And that was pre-COVID. Yeah, since COVID, since May of last year, was it May or June? I forget when they had the month off, but
they were off all of April.
And then they went back mid-May.
Mid-May they went back.
So yeah, they were off for 6 weeks. He hasn't been sick. It's like a miracle. They don't let the kids in for a lot of reasons. But anyways, I say that to say, like, it was definitely a smart move. And, you know, during COVID, we just started to make a lot of changes in our family. That was the first time, you know, reoccurring theme, I think, through all of our podcasts has been Rich travels a lot for his job, right? You heard a lot of our challenges in terms of him feeling like he hasn't been present for things because he has to work or he has a lot of traveling. Well, we both stopped traveling in March of last year and haven't been on a plane since. And I think COVID reveals two things, right? Either you may love your spouse but not like them, or you may love and like them. And I think for us, we realize we really like each other.
Yeah.
She
definitely tolerates me.
But I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, there's been a lot of divorces, but there's also been a lot of revelations where it's like, you get to spend all this time with your family. And don't get me wrong, I mean, I think spending a lot of time with your family without being able to do anything or going anywhere is a test to everyone's nerves. I'm not saying we don't get on each other's nerves, because we do, and we definitely need our own personal time and personal space. But I've loved having him home more and having him here every night for the past year. And that's the first time I've had him home for that consistent of a time, the entire 7 years we've been together.
Yeah. And what's interesting is that, like I said, we will acknowledge our privilege here. Like I said, we have a nice house with a pool. You know, our son has his own room. He's in a good education system down here. The other thing is that we're also 20 miles from the ocean. So if it gets to the point where we just run out of things to do with Donovan, we can just throw him in the car and drive to any beach. There's like
summer. Now the beaches are open, though. Remember, they weren't open. Oh, for what?
Yeah. Until the summer, the beaches weren't open, but now they're open. Yeah. So we can take them to the beach and just have them run it out.
And the weather's beautiful. So like we are lucky here. We get
yes,
that.
We definitely acknowledge our privilege here. But then still, as we went through this, and I think I might be segueing into the next conversation, is we still wanted, now that we got stable, everything is, you know, pretty much in normalized, our new normal with this pandemic. We said, okay, well, we still want to have another child. Mm-hmm. But
this was before the pandemic, though.
Yeah, we started having those conversations.
Yeah, we started talking about that before the pandemic. When we moved into the house and Donovan was doing good in school and, you know, financially we were doing well. And we said, let's explore adoption. You know, I am not going to be able to have another child. And at this point, it might not even be safe. So let's look at adoption. We had a friend who had adopted, and her son was actually the same age as Donovan. And I had conversations with her right before we left Atlanta, because I just wanted to know the process, know what I was in for, know what it was like. Because I think there's a lot of misinformation about adoption. And you know, there's no one in my family who's adopted, even though my brother, I could question him. I'm just kidding. He's going to be so mad at me for saying that. I'm kidding. He's not adopted.
It's like, I mean, I understand how tall he is. But yeah,
you can say both of us are adopted at that case.
Right.
My parents are both really short. Like my mom's 5'4 and my dad's 5'10, maybe 5'11. And my brother's 6'6 and I'm 5'9. And neither one of us look like each other. So like, you know, that's a joke. But no, he's not. My brother is not adopted. But What I was saying is that we didn't really know too much about it. I don't know about you, but I didn't really know. So I had like no knowledge. And one of my biggest fears, and I acknowledge all this stuff throughout our conversations, being really open and honest about what my fears are. And a lot of fears are rooted in just not in lack of knowledge, which is also an overarching theme Rich knows about me, is I research everything. I went to law school. So I think that's like the overarching thing that stuck with me is research. And he's probably like so sick of me being like, well, did you Google it? Like when he says something, I'll be like, did you Google it? But I research everything because I feel like lack of knowledge is really what produces a lot of fear. If you don't know something, you have a fear of it. And one of my fears about adoption, which I couldn't really find any research on, I didn't know anybody to really ask, was that you would adopt this beautiful child, you would fall in love with this child, and then the mother would come back and want the child, and you would just be left with like this huge asshole in your heart. That was always my fear of adoption. And when we started talking about the process, that was turned out to be pretty unfounded. And depending on the state that you, the child is born in, that time is really only 72 or 48 hours. I thought that could happen for years. Like, you know, your kid could be 3 years old and then someone would come back and try
to difference the child. The difference between a contested adoption and an uncontested adoption.
Right. And then, you know, there's the open adoptions and all of that. So we got a lot of knowledge about it. We talked to an adoption agency, the same one our friend used. And, you know, we really just, and it was, I think, you remember what the lady said, which we thought was so fascinating? She goes, "You guys are our ideal adoption couple." Remember her saying that?
And I was like, "Housewife."
Right. We're a black couple. We're not anyone's ideal anything. No offense.
Like we would think like, oh, we're not white and rich. How are how are we the ideal couple?
Right. And we were like, really? And it's this white woman that's telling us this. So we're like, really? And she's like, to be quite honest, a lot of our moms are minority. She's like Latino or black, and they want their kids to be raised by a black heterosexual couple. And this agency was primarily catered towards women, like single women or same-sex couples. So they're like, you would move to the top of our pile. And we're like, wow. So we got accepted into the program.
Right. And then we go through the paperwork of the understanding, okay, what is the overall cost of this thing?
It was pricey.
It was pretty pricey. I said, okay, I think my company has, you know, insurance or, you know, that has coverage around this. And then I call the benefits person and say, okay, how does this work? They say, well, you have to complete the entire process.
And then you get reimbursed.
And then you get reimbursed.
We were like, oh, and once again, we weren't opposed to it, but the pandemic had just hit. And although our jobs were fairly safe,
there are no guarantees. So I said, I don't feel comfortable.
Yeah, we didn't feel comfortable moving ahead. We just knew that we probably should be better safe than sorry. And bringing a child into a situation where we can't guarantee, not that you can ever guarantee a job, but it just felt, everything at that time felt so uncertain.
Extremely.
So we just put a halt on it.
Especially because at the time, and I'll just be transparent, my company that I was working with basically said that if you are not on a project for more than, if you're on the bench for more than 3 or 4 weeks, if people understand that consulting speak, like you're not doing anything, then we will just let you go.
Yeah.
And then the thing that made it even more critical, they said, okay, we're only offering severance if you're on the bench and you accept a package between now and a certain time.
Yeah.
After that certain time, if you're on the bench and we decide to let you go, you walk away with nothing.
Yeah, that was scary. And then for my job, once again, I'm in sales, so I'm what keeps the house going. Right. Like I always say I'm a profit center, not a cost center.
Yeah.
But my industry is like travel services. So it was also
was traveling.
Right. So it was also like a little bit like we just do not feel comfortable about any of this. So we decided to put it on hold. And we really were just like, you know what, we'll focus on our little family. We just have to figure out our
what
outlets.
We want to do.
Yeah. And then we just spent a lot of time and we still continue to. Spent a lot of time. And I think this year, I'll never say 2020 was good. I'll never say a global pandemic was good. It did such destruction to the world and to minority communities, particular black and brown communities around the world. And a lot of people are really suffering without jobs. But what it did for our family was it allowed us to be still and not be a part of the rat race and think about what actually makes us happy and also plan for the future. I think a lot of us who are upper middle class, working corporate jobs, paying student loans, watching kids, traveling, we don't have the time to sit still and be like, what does our 10-year plan look like? What do we want to do? Where do we want to be other than working for this company? Like, what do we want to do? And it also gave us time to focus on our health. I think one of the things that COVID highlighted for us was how unhealthy our community is. Like the Black community is extremely unhealthy. And what we didn't want is we may have just one child, but we want to be around. Like Rich kept saying, what did you keep saying to Donovan about your health? You said, I want to be at your wedding. No, you said, I want to see my grandkids.
I want to be at my grandkids' wedding. So I want to be at your, I want to be at your kids' wedding.
Right. So like we said, okay, we can't just say that and have like no path to get there.
Exactly.
And so, you know, we had already started, I'd already started working out fairly consistently, but I was going to a gym. So I had to figure out new ways to work out because I was definitely not stepping foot in a gym. So like I started really focusing not only on my exercise, but my eating. Rich started focusing on both as well.
Yep. I started eating a little bit better. A little bit better.
But you started exercising.
But yes, I actually started doing more cardio. Yeah. I started, because, you know, I'm in my 40s, but my knees are in their 80s. So I started riding bikes. I pulled out my old bike, dusted it off, put some air in the tires and just started riding around. So at least twice a week now, I'm putting in about a 5-6 mile bike ride. You know, as of course, as I get older, hopefully that gets better. But, you know, I figured, okay, I got about 20 minutes in a day. Let me get this quick 5 miles in.
And we needed consistency.
And we needed that consistency. And the pandemic allowed us to maintain that and begin to keep that habit to where if I go more than a week without riding my bike, I'm like, oh gosh, okay, I need to get on my bike. I need to
And that's kind of what it was, the consistency of the workouts and was our focus. We said we got to be consistent. We got to figure out a way to self-motivate. I mean, I'd always been the person that I need a trainer. I need a gym. Well, I still won't go anywhere near those things. I had to figure out how to self-motivate. I was doing Nike apps. I was running in the neighborhood and I was just working on my own little thing. We got so good at doing all this. We decided, hey, we're going to build a gym in our garage. Like, we were like, let's build a gym in our garage. And I think that kind of takes us to the next part where we said,
Okay.
We go in our garage and we're like, if we're going to build a gym, we don't have any space because Rich had talked about how we had kept all the baby stuff, right? So we kept all this baby stuff from Donovan that we thought we were going to use with the baby that we lost. And then we thought we were going to use it with the baby that was supposed to come from IVF. And we brought it down with us and we brought down a lot of stuff.
I think like at least the 40% of our boxes
was baby stuff.
Was old baby stuff.
And the interesting thing is that like we don't hoard anything. Like we don't have everything that's in our garage was useful except for that stuff.
Exactly.
And so we said if we're going to build a gym, we need space and we don't have space with all this stuff in here. And so, you know, so we made that decision. I think it was more my decision because I think I was holding a lot of that.
Yeah, I think I remember the conversation. I said, what are we holding the stuff for? I mean,
and it was brave of him to have that conversation because he knew.
I knew what I was running into. I knew that this was a very touchy subject, but I said, babe, we got all this stuff. We pretty much decided that we're just going to just live our lives and continue to just move onward and upward with everything. Why are we still holding on to the stuff? Why are we still holding on to the infant car seat that Don was in 4 years ago? Why are we holding on to all these different things that we know that we're not going to use? And they're just taking up space. And it's one of those things where I understand why it was kept, because there was something in the back of Tammy's mind saying that if we get rid of the stuff, that means I'm giving up. And I said, it's not giving up. It's that we just have to make room for whatever God has for us next. Mm-hmm. And this is being all the stuff in there is an emotional crutch. And if we're talking about having all these goals, we have to just move this stuff out. And it was a hard conversation. Like it was a lot of tear shed when we talked about it. And we got up the next day and said, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to make this happen. Yeah. And it felt like there was kind of a weight like of guilt that was kind of coming off our shoulders as we went through this.
Yeah. Or sees me now and I'm like crying just even talking about it because it was such like an emotional moment because, you know, from a distant lens, you can totally understand. But like I was so in it that I couldn't understand that was literally like emotional chains around my neck, that all that stuff. And he knew it. He knew that it was me feeling like I was giving up if I was giving it away. And I had to let it go. And when we had that conversation, and that's one of the things I love so much about him, is that he felt brave enough to have that conversation because he knew it was just like physically weighing me down, and mentally and emotionally. And we packed up the boxes and we said, I don't want to sell this. I want to give it to people who need it, because we're in the middle of a pandemic and people are struggling.
And let's not just go to Goodwill and drop it off.
So we found like a domestic violence shelter.
Yeah, and got rid of most of the clothes.
Most of our stuff to them. We gave our car seat and stroller to, it was this woman who was assisting this, like, essentially, like, I don't know if the woman was, I don't think she was homeless, but she basically had nothing.
She had nothing.
She was in labor and she had nothing. And we gave her our car seat and stroller. And it was crazy because it wasn't, I forget if she was like a foster, care place. And we just, giving all that stuff away felt so good. There were people who really needed it. And it was just like, it felt amazing. I don't know.
it felt like we weren't, like everything that we had worked for individually before we met, collectively since we've been together, it felt like it wasn't in vain. And the thing is, when people hear about us living in, you know, Wellington, Florida, you know, this affluent, I mean, living where we live, then people say, oh, well, you have all the good stuff and you guys are pretty, but like for us, we never forgot about people who didn't have, you know, who didn't have the ability to have. And just, you know, we just keep that, it helps to always continue to find ways to keep that perspective about ourselves so that we don't ever get up beyond ourselves or above where we feel that we are. And seeing the look in that lady's eyes said, okay, I'm just helping out this girl. She has nothing. She's currently in labor right now. The baby is due any minute, but she didn't have a car seat to take the car home. Otherwise they're going to not, she won't, they won't allow her to take the baby home. Yeah. Didn't have a stroller, didn't have clothes, didn't have bottles, didn't have any of that stuff. And initially we gave her a few things. She's like, oh, here's $50 for it. This is going to be so great. Thank you so much. And we just said, wait, what else do you need? What else do you need? And we were seeing just like the joy in her heart and the tears coming out of her eyes, said like, wow, they're giving us everything. I said, we don't need this right now.
Yeah.
You do.
You need
this more than we do.
And that was it. It was one of those things where it was like the joy of like, and people say it and it sounds like so cliche, but like the feeling of just being able to give somebody something that they so desperately need is like, it's like burst your heart. I don't know how else to.
Yeah. And it's not one of those things where people say, oh, I just give to charity and I'm this and da da da. It's like, no, it felt legitimately great to know that we weren't going to use this and somebody else could. And the key thing about this is that sometimes you have to get rid of certain things in your life and make room for different things. And that's in order to have God bless you with something else.